Hi everyone, you're listening to the DieCast. Today with me, as always, is Seamus.
That's me.
And that's about it. There's nobody else here. Everybody else was like, we're not going to show up to the DieCast this week. We don't like you people anymore. No, there's
that's
nobody
not
else
true.
Here at all.
That's not true.
Definitely not our sixth ranger, Jarenth.
I was only going to talk if you actually introduced me.
Or our friend and common 20-sided commenter, Krellen.
It's okay, Josh. I still like you.
Wow. That's one of you.
Yeah, that's like, I actually have a fan base. We wanted to try something a little bit different with the format, which is to bring back a little bit about news. I like doing that, and we haven't talked about news very much on the DieCast since we stopped doing the news segment. So let's kick this off by talking about probably the biggest news this week, which is that reports are coming through that Google has indeed signed a deal to buy Twitch for about $1
billion. $1
billion.
So disappointing. That is just so much of the internet's video content in the hands of one company. That is just so worrisome. It will be good short term. I'm sure that means Twitch will have awesome infrastructure and be faster and speedier, but that is just super uncomfortable. I mean, look at how angry we get at the cable companies now, and there's at least a couple of those. 20 years down the road, the name Google might not be synonymous with, you know, the best in internet technology. It might just be that giant company of dicks who doesn't have to listen to their customers.
Yeah, I'm not even sure I even get the point of why they needed to do this. I mean, YouTube's already doing half of what Twitch does, and all they needed to do was put
yes.
a streaming interface on it.
Yeah, really.
They do have a streaming interface, it's just don't. People don't use it very much.
But they could leverage their YouTube. Like, why did they pay $1 billion? What are they getting for $1 billion? They have the technology right now to just roll out streaming on their own. So was the entire point of this purpose to get all of Twitch's customers, by which I just mean, you know, users, just to get access
probably that. The name and the user base.
I think it's definitely a situation of why bother trying to compete when you can just buy the competition?
Because $1 billion is a lot of money?
But that's standard MO for technical companies. I mean, that's just what tech companies do. They don't innovate themselves. They just buy their competition and say, okay, you guys made this thing we want. We're going to own you now.
I mean, it's hard to remember now, but YouTube was not, like, started by Google either. YouTube was started by someone completely unrelated.
Right.
They actually bought YouTube back in 2006 for, like, $1.6 billion or something like that.
2006? So that
yeah.
far back?
All the way back then.
And the other weird thing about this is that puts Google in a deal. I mean, there's that deal between Twitch and PlayStation. So now that means there's a deal between Google and PlayStation, or Sony, really, so that you can stream from your PlayStation. And so now that means there's this connection between Sony and Google, which I find interesting.
Maybe, maybe not. I mean, from a legal standpoint, that contract may not be transferable. I mean, it may not work out that way.
Boy, if that
I mean,
was
Twitch
true,
itself isn't going away. I don't
think
that's going to invalidate any contracts. I know the biggest concern that I've seen voiced on the internet recently about this is that with Google coming in, like, it's not just bad that Google's going to own the biggest streaming service and the biggest online video service, but the big concern is that they're going to throw the content ID system in there, and that's going to prevent streamers from being able to do stuff like play music during their stream, because maybe someone with a copyright thing is going to come in and say, oh, you can't use that.
Because we've all seen how well it works on YouTube.
It could even get worse and do stuff to the video game footage. You know, maybe you're streaming a game and you come onto a cutscene and suddenly the stream cuts out and it says, this cannot be displayed because of a copyright notice. Here's an ad, or something like that. I question whether that will actually come to pass. I mean, Twitch is doing pretty well on its own. It seems, you know, maybe smart to not mess with their formula too much. On the other hand, Google is in this, like, crazy legal quagmire with the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, and they might just have to do that. I mean, that's the whole reason they came up with Content ID in the first place. I doubt they actually wanted to do it so much as they wanted to prevent themselves from getting sued.
Although, just to keep themselves from getting sued, it strikes me that they have gone above and beyond what they needed to do to avoid lawsuits.
I would be surprised if there was not some money in their money incentives from, you know, Hollywood and recording studios and that kind of thing. Studios.
The thing that gets me, really, is if there's any company that has both the resources and the reason to stand up for copyright, it's Google. Because they specialize in delivering content, not in creating content.
Right. And they don't want to just be delivering content owned by a couple companies that would have a lot of leverage over them. Much better to have to be the people delivering this content made by the masses, but you got to protect their copyright and fair use, because a lot of what people are going to make is content recycled from, you know, just general ambient culture. So if those people don't have protected copyrights, then that could hurt YouTube's real driving force. Nobody goes to YouTube to watch the Avengers, but they'd go to YouTube to watch a review of the Avengers. And so it does seem like it would be in YouTube's best interest to defend fair use, rather than framing this as copyright, let's say framing it as fair use. And it seems like they haven't, they did not need to be as aggressive as they've been in going after fair use, I think. I don't think the threat of lawsuit was so dire that they needed to make this massive, draconian, doomsday content match system. Well, they needed to make it, but to employ it so heavily. Like, they could have filtered out a lot of stuff and forced companies to push back a little bit. Okay, you're going to have to push us if you want us to go after all these little things. Make the big company push you into going after fair use.
Or maybe that is what happened. I mean, that's something that we don't know. We don't know how big the actual lobbying pressure and political pressure on Google is and was and has been.
I guess I would like, ideally, if I had been in Google's spot, I would have dragged my feet and made them push, and I would have been transparent about it as possible. Like, oh, well, we don't want to do this, but here is the legal document we got from, you know, so-and-so record company or so-and-so movie company that says we got to do it. Oh, we're sorry, we don't want to do this. That would at least focus blame where it belongs, as opposed to just building this giant friend computer system that can't be reasoned with, argued with, analyzed, scrutinized, or questioned.
It's, of course, that is noting, assuming that. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's worth noting that Hollywood has been around for a lot longer than Google and has a lot more political power than Google has. I mean, to a seen extent when you really get into it.
It's true. It's not just about money. It's about money and connections. And nobody has connections like Hollywood.
Also, you're kind of assuming that Google would not be down for this, but I think the scarier situation is, what if they are? Like, what if they actually did create a system like this out of their own free will? Because if they are already the largest content providers and the largest streaming provider and the largest email provider and the largest search engine, they're kind of getting the monopoly on information on the internet this way. It's kind of a cyberpunk line of thinking, but...
It really is. It really is, and really it's not a problem now. I love my Gmail, I love Google, I use them both freely. Even though alternatives are available, I like them a lot. But yeah, there is that discomfort of having that many eggs in one basket. And with a company that's not really great about transparency. Although Google has little corners of transparency, like when they communicate with devs, when they launch a new project, they're super connected and want to talk to their users. And then once something gets rolling, it goes back behind the curtain and we stop interacting with it.
Well, this is all a far bigger topic than really what's just happening right now and reaches into the that's been going on pretty much since Google's inception, which was that, like, hey, do we really want all of this to be under the banner of one company? But at the very least, it seems pretty certain that very soon Google will Twitch, as well as YouTube, and we have that to look forward to.
And at that point, they can legally change their name to NBN.
Also in the news, and this really isn't just from this week, but it's been going on for a while, is the continuing troubles of Crytek. Earlier this year, a few months ago, there were rumors sort of swirling around about Crytek being in an excessively bad financial situation, and in fairness, it's kind of easy to see where these rumors would have come from, given the fact that... they haven't been really releasing games that have been doing very well. Warface was a complete flop in Western Europe and the United States. It's apparently caught on in Russia, though, and they really love those free-to-play sort of games. And Crytek has been talking about how it wants to pursue both engine creation in the same way that
Unreal
is doing the Unreal engine.
No, I'm sorry, I messed you up. Id is Id Tech, and Epic is Unreal Engine. And I messed you up by jumping. That was my fault.
I don't know why I said Id did Unreal. I knew I was saying it wrong, but you get the idea. And that and, like, free-to-play games, which is a weird course to take for the guys who did Crysis. But, late June, several sources in Crytek's UK's offices, said that their staff was, not being paid wages and hadn't been paid wages since April. And shortly afterwards, a number of those sources said that they were no longer even going to work. Crytek just yesterday, as of today, July 25th, finally addressed all of these concerns in a statement. Saying that in recent weeks there have been repeated reports and rumors relating to financial problems at Crytek. Having already given an update to staff across all our studios, we are now in a position to share more details with members of the press and public. Internally, we have acknowledged that the flow of information to employees has not been as good as it should have. However, we hope that you understand that communicating details of our plans publicly has not always been possible. Like the games industry as a whole, Crytek has been in a transitional phase. Our evolution from a development studio to an online publisher has required us to refocus our strategies. These challenges go along with an increasing demand for capital, which we have secured. We can now concentrate on the long-term strategic direction of Crytek and our core competencies. We kindly ask for your understanding that we won't be communicating further details about our developments and progress. Ultimately, with our organization capitalization, portfolio, and technologies, we have now laid the foundations for securing Crytek's future, not just in the short term, but also in the long term. And it goes on for a little bit more, but the gist is there. So it sounds like, according to them, their financial problems are over because they have been able to, I guess, find more venture capital. Where exactly that leaves Crytek at the moment is a matter of some debate. Frankly, again, it's really strange that this studio that became known for basically making really, like, good-looking PC game shooters has now been going in this weird direction of, let's make, like, MOBAs and free-to-play online games.
They don't have any, like, their connections aren't set up for that. That's not what their core, in their language, their core competency. Like, do we have a staff of MOBA people? No, we've got a staff of graphics programmers and polygon pushers. Why are you going in this direction? And if you see an opportunity, like Valve saw, okay, digital distribution is an opportunity nobody else is taking. Let's get into it. It's another thing if you're launching into a new business that's already getting kind of crowded and already has people in it that know what they're doing. Like, why are you getting into this business that you're not good at, that is already occupied? It's, you know, you're not filling a vacuum. You're just going in to compete with an entrenched opposition, and you're doing it, and apparently you didn't plan ahead because you ran out of capital. All of those are really, really bad signs.
They're apparently doing this at the cost of their other, like, core properties. Like, you remember they did Rise, the PS4 launch game? I think it was PS4. Maybe it was Xbox One.
I thought that was PS4. The Son of Rome?
It's the Roman one. And that game was, I guess, not, like, terribly well-received, but wasn't, like, awful. But apparently, the Rise sequel has been put on, like, indefinite hold. And Crytek UK are the guys, the studio
To be clear, you were right. It was Xbox One's launch title. I misremembered.
Okay. And Crytek UK was the studio that was working on Homefront 2, which is another, like, why are you buying this property? But whatever.
Yeah, you bought a game that flopped with a troubled development history that did not do well, that is also in a crowded market, and you bought it. I mean, you could just, why buy it? Make your own. You just make up your own shooter about shooting dudes. But you had to buy one that flopped.
Like, you could call it Crysis or something.
Yeah, you've already got one that you're not even using. But then you buy one that launched poorly. Makes no sense.
It is a really weird way of changing your business direction, isn't it? But, like what you said earlier, they're really well known for making fancy, expensive linear shooters, and I can imagine that maybe that market doesn't work that well anymore. I mean, is there really room for another Crysis and another Homefront and another whatever it is they were also doing? Like, I can imagine that this was an attempt for them to diversify.
There really isn't room for another Crysis because all of the other series are now also Crysis. Like, what Crysis was back when Crysis first came out, that's the level all the other games are at, and there aren't really boundaries to push still in that regard. I mean, there's nowhere more to go with the graphics. But I also think this whole thing might tie back to one of Seamus's recent columns, where these guys don't know what they're doing. Video game companies don't know what they're doing. They don't know what it is they want, what they're trying to accomplish, other than not fail. Where they should be concentrating. They're floundering around, and that's really what this looks like. It's just another company floundering around, trying to find something to grab onto. And unfortunately for Crytek, unlike EA, Crytek doesn't have these studios that bring in money every single year to help keep them afloat.
So basically, a stupid attempt to diversify, and more or less the opposite of what Seamus just said. Them just going, well, we have developers, they can make mobile games, right? And MOBAs, it's just all the same thing. Just have them work on that, and we'll see how it goes. Because they don't know what they're doing. That's what you're positing.
I don't know for sure that they said their current developers should go do something different, but it does kind of feel like the company felt, well, we should be doing more than just this, because that's what you do.
And their problem always was, they're like, they focused so much on the graphics, which was a stupid thing to focus on. They could.
It did get them notoriety for a while, as
right?
The,
but
like,
they never
Gannett Crisis kind of
right. But
almost has a benchmark utility.
Right, but they never like built on that. They like, okay, now we've got, we are the name in graphic suite games. Let's refine our art. Let's make a game that's really fun to play. Let's make games that are really interesting that people talk about. They really didn't. They made big, dumb, loud, super macho. And there is only, I mean, I'm a dude that likes some macho shooters. I played Bulletstorm this week, and I loved it. But there's only so much of that you can play. I would not want to play just only bro shooters like that. It's a narrow market. There's a lot of games that want to do it, and you need something, and the thing that you bring to the table should not be our graphics are 10% better than everybody else's. That's terrible. That's a dumb idea. You know, what is it that makes your game fun? And they never refined that. Their games do not feel great to play. And, I mean, it's not like for lack of try. They've put out several games. They've got the Far Cry series and the Crysis series.
Well, they only did Far Cry 1, then they sold it to Ubisoft, or they split from Ubisoft or whatever.
Yeah, okay.
So Far Cry 2 and 3 are a different studio.
But the Crysis games do not feel particularly like... It sounds like it should be fun. You're in this super suit, you can throw stuff, you're super strong. But it was never as gleefully fun as just punting stuff with the gravity gun. It just never felt... I wish Chris was here so he could say kinesthetically pleasing. Because that's what we need to say right now. And yeah. I can't say that without... sounding pretentious. But that's what they needed, and their games were never
infringing on his trademark.
Yes. The games were never satisfying to play.
You know, even if we forgive, like, maybe they just didn't have the designers who could make a game that was enjoyable to play in that way, maybe they should have doubled down on the graphic thing, and instead of making, oh, we have amazing graphics, pushed the art direction, made beautiful games.
Yes.
Games that were amazing to look at. Works of art in digital form. But obviously they can't do that because then you can't have explosions.
Those are like two different avenues of making better graphics. I mean, like, the technical aspect of writing better shaders and writing better engines that can handle more polygons and higher quality textures is pretty far removed from how do I make this game look nice, look pleasing.
It's not like the video game industry has a dearth of artists out there.
Right. But they didn't do any of that. They didn't build on their gameplay, they didn't refine it, they didn't work on their art to make something really remarkable that nobody's ever seen before. Like, Crysis 2 and Bulletstorm. I'd say Bulletstorm is way more interesting and pleasing to look at. Bulletstorm has got some amazing, just crazy alien worlds to look at, and Crysis 2 had, you know, post-apocalypse New York, sort of. And it's like, well, we've kind of been here. Okay, this is probably the best version of post-apocalypse New York I've ever seen, but it's only 10% better than the other versions.
The Statue of Liberty kind of bugged me, though.
Yes, that really did bug me, too.
Doesn't the Crysis series deal with an alien invasion?
Yes. Yeah.
So like, it's really difficult to draw like a continuity between the three main games because none of them
the
really make any sense.
The important thing is there were aliens, right? Just the presence of aliens is the only important thing.
Or maybe like not aliens because they were like from Earth. Actually, it's weird.
But just what I've been playing this week is a lot of Saints Row 4, and Saints Row 4 did beautiful things with this is your world, but with aliens now. I mean, with the towers and the big thing towering over your head, although all through Steelport there, just the thing. It just really felt like, yeah, this is our world invaded by aliens. And they could have done something with that, but no, they just had more broken buildings and shit.
And Crysis 2 went sort of the... I'll tell you what, the aliens had the same problem I had with the Transformers in the Transformers movie. It's that you couldn't get a good read on them. They didn't seem to, they just were sort of this jagged, ugly pile of shape. they didn't seem to have body language. They weren't menacing or grotesque. They were just sort of this really generic, over-designed evil thing, and they were, well, they're dark, and so they're evil, and they've got red lights on them, so they're evil. Felt very evil in a very bland way, so they weren't, as you build up to seeing more and more of this alien crap, none of it feels fantastic or insidious. It's just, oh, kind of a fourth generation H.R. Giger ripoff, only not nearly as good, or inventive, or disturbed.
Did you say Giger?
I've heard his name pronounced, it's H.R. Giger or H.R. Geiger, and I've heard it pronounced both ways, and I don't know which is correct. I mean, it looks like Geiger. It looks like Geiger, because it looks like Geiger counter, but then you hear somebody say H.R. Giger, and you think, well, maybe because it's somebody's, I don't know.
I don't know.
Wikipedia suggests that his actual name is spelled G-I-G-E-R.
Oh!
I don't know where the E came from.
So it's not like a Geiger counter, Geiger.
Or am I looking at the wrong guy? No. Is this another
HR? No, yeah, he's Swiss, and it's G-I-G-E-R. So, Gerenf, how do you pronounce that in Swiss?
1.21 Geigers.
Swiss is not actually a language.
Bergen?
Though.
Interesting.
I wish this website would let me listen to what words sound like. If only there was a website that did that.
This is a problem with German offshoots. There's just too many of them and nobody knows.
Slight tangent, but this is actually a thing that's bothered me about Wikipedia for years, is when they switch to IPA, it's like, nobody fucking reads IPA. How do I pronounce that? Now I have to learn a whole new language to know how to pronounce things.
Which, didn't I mean, they used to do, like, OGG files as, like, for
they
pronunciation?
Did. Yeah, they did. Like,
what happened
six,
to that?
7 years ago. They changed their standard. They wanted to be more
Wikipedia politics is dumb. Whatever. Yeah, Crytek.
It's really sad
just
that they're breaking down.
Failing AAA studio, I guess.
I had a lot of fun with Crysis 1. And then they made Crysis 2 and it was just less of the same.
That's a good way to play.
Crysis 2, the other thing about it is it felt like that game thought it was Half-Life 2. It was just convinced that this, it really, really thought this was Half-Life, but in New York instead of quasi-Europe. And it was so sure, and it was so far off the mark. It was so frustrating.
So, moving on here, we have one other news topic that people might have heard of, which is the whole Yogscast, Yog Ventures Kickstarter fiasco, but
we actually had an
email question that was not directly about this, but kind of ties into this topic. So, if Seamus, you could preface this with that question.
Okay. Dear Diecast, I'm wondering how you feel about well-funded corporations resorting to crowdfunding. In specific, I was wondering about your views of Steam's recent crowdfunding of their Dota 2 international prize pool, given that only 25% of the money donated went into the actual prize pool. Regards, random internet lurker.
Now, we're not going to talk about Dota 2 because no one here right now knows anything about Dota 2's crowdfunding or has actually even played Dota 2 for longer than like 10 minutes. But we think this question kind of ties into the whole Yogscast thing, because this was like Yogscast was an established thing by that point.
Brand,
you know, they were still making a lot of money at the time, they were already making a lot of money at the time. Presumably, they still are. And they funded this Kickstarter. Well, they set up this Kickstarter with this other developer that wasn't like part of the Yogscast, but the idea was he would make this video game that would be like an official Yogscast video game called Yog Ventures, and that was funded to what was the end funding on that? Something like
just
500,000.
Yeah, it was about half million and change.
Yeah. They set off on this, and this was like 18
which
months
is
ago
twice
or something
as much
like that.
As what they asked for.
A year and a half or so. Yeah, it was crazy. This was like a year and a half ago. And it seems that like right away stuff started going wrong really, really quickly. And by the time it got to, like, last month, the only person still working on the project was the lead programmer. But the guy that had originally been, like, contracted out to do all this stuff. But when it finally failed, the lead developer of Yogg Ventures, lead developer who goes by the alias Wintercool.
Okay, that's a bad sign right there.
Company.
Yeah, that's a bad sign when somebody goes by their internet handle. I mean, I'm sure they know each other's real name, but I just, that's really weird that somebody is still known in public.
I think he just goes by Chris. I'm not entirely sure where
you see him. You're sitting in a room with Gerenth and Krellin.
Well, nobody's given either of you guys $500,000. You know,
why not?
I guess,
Krellin, we should start a Kickstarter.
We should,
or a Patreon, either or.
A Kickstarter.
We should start a Kickstarter to get a Patreon.
The Kickstarter to give Gerenth $500,000 is the kick. That's it.
You know,
what are the risks? The risks are that I won't get $500,000.
The risks are that I'll be super sad if it doesn't work.
It's
Here's a bit of gossipy stuff from the Yogg Ventures. I heard this from Rutzgarn, and I don't know what his source is, and he's not here this week, but I will...
Are you talking about the dude who... the LucasArts thing?
Yes.
Yeah, so, this was They posted their last Kickstarter update, said, like, basically this thing is shutting down, and then people were like, what the heck? So, they sent out an email that to clarify things, and the Yogscast guys have also been sending out statements to clarify stuff, and they're kind of playing a blame war with one another. First things that happened was this thing that Seamus is talking about.
What happened is they contracted a bunch of people to help make this video game, and one of the people was an artist. And as I understand it, again, this is hearsay, and I can't source it right now, but
source.
Okay, I will put it in the show notes.
I was probably the one who told Rutzgarn.
Right, but they paid everybody up front. Here, we want you to work on video game. There's no contract, there's no clear... indication of, well, what do
well,
we expect you to deliver?
We don't know if they had a contract. There might have been
it
a
contract.
It sounds
like... But well, okay, if they did have a contract, it was completely in it. Yeah, because...
That's something about that I don't have the source for. Sorry,
yeah,
go ahead.
Because what happened was they gave this guy $35,000 or something in that ballpark, which I want to point out is the entire kickstarting fund for Unrest. That is everything Unrest got through Kickstarter, was this much money, and all of it went to this one guy. And I don't even know how long he worked on the project. It was not long. And then he said, hey, I've gotten a job at LucasArts.
It was 2 weeks.
2 weeks, and I've got a non-compete contract, so I can't work on the game anymore. And completely lacking in integrity, this guy did not give back the money, and probably he would defend himself saying, well, the contract didn't require me to do so, which, true, but I would still consider that to be incredibly unethical, to be given money to deliver something, even if you didn't promise to deliver, even if there was no contract and no promise, or the contract just says that you can do it if you want, or whatever. I consider it to be incredibly lacking in integrity to take the money, then take on another obligation that precludes you from meeting your first obligation without giving the money back. So there, boom, that was like a huge chunk of the money gone right out of the gate. And everybody else was paid up front, so nobody has an incentive to like keep working or keep polishing. It was just grossly mismanaged.
The good news is that, you know, that was like 18 months ago, so I'm sure he lasted a long time at that LucasArts job.
Yeah, when did LucasArts close down or whatever?
About 18 months ago. It was like a year and a half ago now. So, yeah, that must have been interesting, going from that, taking your money from that, and then getting a contract with LucasArts, and then, like, the next month, LucasArts shuts down.
And he didn't go back and meet his obligations at the original job, either.
I'm sure the $35,000 that he basically got for 2 weeks of work softened the blow a little bit.
So bad, so bad. And if you're going to, you know, if you're not going to work with people that you trust, and you're, if you're going to pay people up front, then you had better make sure you've got a good contract.
So, pretty much immediately after this happens, the Yogscast guys come in and say, like, what the fuck? You know, what are you doing mismanaging this thing horribly and took, like, apparently, like, half of the budget and requested that be transferred over to them. Like, all the budget that hadn't already been spent on people who may or may not be running off with the money. And this has been kind of a point of concern now with the Yogscast guys, because the question now is, like, well, where did that $250,000 they took go?
150.
Oh, was it 150? Well, and the Yogscast guys have been saying that it was all spent on getting the physical rewards to backers out, and on, like, securing this other stuff that they've been doing to kind of compensate people who backed the game, and now the game is not actually happening. Like, they got Steam keys for another kickstarted game that they say is just like what they wanted YogVentures to be, which is
it's called
Tug. Tug, yeah, but that's like an abbreviation or an acronym.
Well, that's what it's called in the Steam store.
Oh, really? Okay.
No, really, what is it really called? Just Tug.
I think it might actually be Just Tug. Give me a sec.
Apparently, really, Just Tug. Okay, well, Tug then. So that's what they've been saying. People are skeptical. This whole thing is a crazy debacle. Probably the biggest high-profile Kickstarter failure in a long time, possibly ever.
Yeah.
Well, certainly at least since video game people started paying attention to it.
Yeah, since Kickstarter basically became the thing you go to fund indie games. It's weird kind of how much that's taken over the, like, original intention of Kickstarter, isn't it?
Well, the original Kickstarter is still there. I'm pretty sure, like, Kickstarter grew, so, like, yeah. Original Kickstarter's core is still there, and then the video game stuff is added.
Yeah.
I remember suggesting on Twitter that when something like this does fail, because, you know, it was obvious that this project was badly, badly managed. Like, nobody had any idea what they were doing. This
no
feels
one had
like,
any, like, business experience,
right.
Basically.
It,
was the,
not only
the
that, it
line.
Feels... Yeah, it feels like a bunch of starry-eyed artists, fresh out of art school, who have no idea what money is or what you're supposed to do with it, tried to run a company and just completely imploded. But, you know, that isn't always the case.
Remember that when this whole thing started, when the Kickstarter was completed, the Wintergreen Company did not have a main coder yet.
Huh. Yeah.
And it was actually the Yogscast's responsibility to hire a main coder for them.
That's an alarm bell. That's an alarm bell. We've got an idea for a game. We're looking for a coder.
And they spent, like, half of their budget in the first week.
Yeah,
on
that's
concept
crazy.
Art.
Right, you get the coder first. Coder comes first. You design your art pipeline. How can people start making art assets if they don't know what format they need, how they're going to be used, what kind of engine are we using? I mean, there are just so many things. Your coder should come before everything else. Once you've got your art pipeline hammered out, then you tell your artists, okay, here is how you will produce content. This is the format. Here's your polygon budget. Here's your texture budget. Here's the utilities you'll use for conversion. Here's how you'll test them. Here's how we expect them to look, and here's how you'll work together. With none of that, nobody can make anything. It's like hiring the wallpaperer and the decorator and the painter before you build the house. They cannot start work until the other person has done a significant amount of their work. It's a waste of their time.
Almost before you get the ground to build the house on.
Yes. you need to have somebody lined up that can put bricks on top of each other. So that was the alarm bell one. But even in a well-managed project, things can go wrong, and projects can fail. And I suggested at one point, when that happens, and there's been something crowdfunded, I think the right thing to do is to take all art assets and all code and just immediately release them to the public. So maybe this can be salvaged. Yeah, or at least to the backers. Yeah, either way. I think that would be the right thing to do. They didn't do that here. They're handing it off, and they're actually trying to finish the game somehow. It is worrisome.
They're not trying to finish the game. They're kind of throwing their weight behind this tug game as like, oh, this is probably how the game would have looked, you know, minus the fact that it's not actually about the Ogscast. And that seems to be what they're like. I guess they bought basically a whole bunch of Steam keys to give to the backers, which is supposedly where some of that $125,000 went.
So I noticed, according to the Wintercool developer, apparently Amazon and Kickstarter's share was 25% up front. So I wonder if maybe that was more than they were counting on too.
There's also the issue with a lot of backers not actually paying.
Well, that's always a problem. I mean, like, even with, like, our Patreon campaigns, we often have a couple of people each month that their credit card declines or whatever, and we don't get the money that they pledged. I mean, that's what you kind of expect whenever you do crowdsourcing like this, is that there's going to be a certain percentage of people who run into problems getting the money to you, or back out at the last minute, or that kind of thing.
Of course, they still plan to receive twice as much money as they actually initially plan to get. So it's still some mismanagement on all levels
to be able to burn through
that much more money than you initially expected.
It reminds me a bit of what was that GTA MMO?
All Points Bulletin.
Yeah, All Points Bulletin, where they had like $100 million to develop it, and they planned to run out of money as the game launched. They planned to spend all of the money that they had right up to the point where the game launched, and then they wondered why they went bankrupt.
And as I recall the reports of the game, they spent like the entire budget on the character creator, and then there wasn't even a game there either.
I think they spent a lot of their money on like the sort of bullshit, like quality of life things, like, oh, let's all go on vacation to some like tropical thing, or like send the whole staff on a tropical cruise or something like that, or like spend a lot of money on new offices with like crazy amenities that nobody wants, that sort of thing.
This brings up an interesting point. Okay, in both cases, you've got, okay, All Points Bulletin got a huge amount of money from real investors. I mean, people that are ostensibly wealthy, or, you know, if they're not wealthy, then they were incredibly stupid to be risking that much of their life savings.
Venture capitalism is this weird sort of field of capitalism where people give money to people who should not have money.
Right, but you've got this where a bunch of wealthy, let's just assume for the sake of argument, these are wealthy people. These are venture capitalists, whether they're 100,000-aires or millionaires or billionaires, whatever it is, they've got some money that they're willing to put at risk to back a venture. And the money was spent incredibly, incredibly poorly. And on the other hand, we've got the Yogg Ventures, which a bunch of just regular people like you and me, people that don't have tons of capital to risk on anything, but we have little bits of disposable income, and we all pitched in a few dollars and raised this massive amount of money, and that money was spent very, very poorly. And it's a bigger deal. I mean, okay, All Points Bulletin wasted something on the order of 400 times more than Yogg Ventures. I mean, it was a lot more money, but nobody really got... Everybody laughed at them, but nobody got angry because, you know, venture capitalists. You gotta be grown up about this. You gotta know what you're doing when you put your money at risk. But when it's small fries like us, and I'm not saying this is bad, this makes sense to me, when small fries like us lose our money, we get more angry. But I think it's interesting that it happens, you know, even to venture capitalists who we assume would know what they're doing and know better how to judge a project.
I think this all kind of ties into the original question that sort of started this conversation about companies or people with lots of money already who go to crowdfunding and how we feel about that. And like the fact that both seem to be able to lose money so easily. Although even the Yogg Ventures guy, I mean, the Yogg's cast had lots of money at the time. I mean, they were not like super huge, but the Yogg's cast is clearly a profitable business. And then they go and they're like, hey, you want to kickstart this video game?
Well, so I think like the question might have a fundamental flaw in it. And that's the idea that companies have lots of money. I mean, that's just not necessarily a given.
That's a good point. They don't always have a lot, even if they're worth a lot. They don't have piles of money sitting in a great big Uncle Scrooge vault waiting to be used.
Aww.
That's what they tell you, anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, we know this for a fact, Josh, actually, because most of these companies are publicly traded and have to release their financial statements.
Yeah.
By law. So, I mean, we know that they don't have, like, the cash flow to just say, okay, well, we need $10 million to make this game, and we have $10 million sitting around, so here you go make that game. You know, they might have a fifth of it, or half of it, you know, if they're EA. So, you know, that's part of that, is they, you know, they still need some extra. And, you know, the idea that, oh, they're a big company, they shouldn't be crowdsourcing, it doesn't feel right to me. It's like, anybody should be able to crowdsource. I mean, from certain standpoint, I mean, why should Obsidian have been able to crowdsource their thing? Why should Harebrained Schemes have been able to do theirs, or InXile, or whatever Tim Schafer's company is, because I can't remember its name.
I think
Double Fine.
It's also a valid way to gauge how successful an idea might actually be.
Yes. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like, this is the
if
case
nobody
for a
wants
lot
to
of...
donate. Yeah, it's almost like a real, it's almost like the best form of focus group. Okay, I could bring a group of yahoos into a focus group. Hey, do you want a game about this? And they'll say, oh, sure, that sounds good. Would you give $5 to it? Well, hell no. Okay, then you don't really want to, like, you would play this game if it was in front of you right now and it sounds kind of good. But you don't actually like this idea enough to risk your own money, so maybe you don't really like this idea. It's a really good test of an idea.
Yeah, and it's the case where a lot of these Kickstarters, they'll, like, fund a sort of, like, an initial sort of bankroll for it, and it won't be nearly enough money to actually make the game, but then they'll take that and they'll go get like proper funding from investors and that kind of thing.
That was definitely the case in several of the early Kickstarters, at least, like that one tactical FPS game that almost failed and then redid their whole video and just barely succeeded. That was a whole, we need to show the venture capitalists that this is actually a thing people want, so we need to raise a little bit of money from you guys, and then they'll kick in the rest, and then we'll make the game. And that was what the whole situation was, but they were upfront about it. They said, that's what's happening. You know, they didn't try to hide it.
And then there are Kickstarters like Star Citizen, whose Kickstarter just never ends. I have a lot of problems with Star Citizen, and I'm kind of regretting back, but that is a topic for another diecast.